Welcome to the Home Tech Podcast, show number 2, recorded December 9th, 2010. We are the podcast for you and your friends with tech questions. We're your family's tech guys. Have home tech issues? Can't figure out the new iPod? Have no idea how to work the new cell phone? Having trouble with your wireless router? We know you know how to fix it, but they don't. While this podcast is for you, it's mostly for them. We talk tech, but for the average tech guy. I'm joined today by my trusty cadre of tech guys. First of all, we have Brian Burgess. Brian's a longtime blogger with How To Geek and now blogs for both theaverageguy.tv and thehomeserver.com, and has been working on some PC 101 and some home server 101 posts as of late. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Jim.
Good. And thanks for all that writing that you're doing out there.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoy it.
That's good stuff. Christian Johnson. Christian is a developer for Maple Grove Partners, and he's a website administrator and BIOS developer for BIOS-mods.com. Why not, Christian, why not BIOS mods, and why the dash in BIOS-mods.com?
To keep things short, the domain name got snatched, and we don't have ownership over it, but the dash at least helps people distinguish the two words. So
excellent. Yeah, and if you're – this is a – BIOS modding is kind of a realm that – I mean, it is kind of techie. I mean, it's pretty super techie, right? But something I've not gotten into much, but as I've checked out your site over the last couple weeks, lots of folks out there, you know, trying to mod their BIOS. Why would they do that?
Yeah, to keep things kind of on the simple edge, people who are having problems with their motherboard in terms of not getting the support they expected with the manufacturer, they come to us with all sorts of random questions. You know, there's an option missing here, and I was working with Tim DeLeo on EFI, and we were looking into, you know, can we enable an EFI option in the BIOS? So really it's just to enable some functionality that may have been hidden or not unlocked because it's an OEM PC, and the OEM manufacturers like Dell and HP don't want people messing around with their systems. So this kind of helps that mid-range community who has these bought PCs, but they want to do something more.
Sure.
And that's really where the site attraction comes in.
Yeah, and so for the beginners, the BIOS is that very first kind of screen that shows up when you boot your computer, and you can either F2 or F12, or it's usually a set of keys, and then you get kind of a very DOS or kind of a very rudimentary looking screen, and a lot of people start freaking out at that point, right? When they see that, what do I do? You guys work in that realm to add additional functionality or to maybe fix something that wasn't working before. Christian, you're also active in supporting the Windows home server community. I know you're working on a couple add-ins, so thanks for doing that as well.
No problem.
Last, our special guest, John Zadler. John podcast with me over at the Home Server Show, and is just an all-around good guy and very knowledgeable in a lot of areas. So we like to have John on to kind of fill in the background. John, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing good. Interesting to be on another show. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, well, thanks for being here, John. It's always good to have you. I want to let you know, if you do want to interact with the show or get information to us, you can email the show at podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can also follow all the fun stuff that shows up on Twitter. That's twitter.com/theaverageguy. That's all one word, the average guy. And we tweet out there and retweet some stuff. We don't have too many followers out there yet, so if you're listening to this and you want to follow kind of what's going on with both the site and the podcast, it would be great to follow us on Twitter. All right, guys, let's jump right into what we've got scheduled for tonight. I wanted to change the show format a little bit this week. I'm going to do some news right up front and talk about some things that may affect everybody out there. I think the biggest news item, at least I crossed my reading this week, and affected a lot of people because there's like 500 million people on Facebook these days. But Facebook launched a redesigned profile page. Now, this didn't affect everybody's homepage, so to speak. When you go to Facebook.com and you're looking at your news feed, that didn't necessarily change. Although I think the icon or the font size has changed in the last couple weeks, or maybe month, right? I think that's gotten smaller. Did you guys notice that as well? That the fonts have gotten smaller on Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's either font's getting smaller, or your eyesight is getting worse.
Maybe I'm just getting old. That looks like that changed.
It's funny because I know on some sites there, I know Dave on his site, he was talking about redoing his stuff, and my pointer is always put the font bigger, put the font bigger. So I'm getting older. So at least you're on your site there, the average guy, it's a decent size for me.
We try and keep that for the older folks in the crowd, right? We try and keep that larger. But on your profile page, so that's the page that would have all the information that you've posted that's out there. Kind of a redesigned look. They added, it's kind of more photo driven. So they've added a kind of a photo ribbon across the top. It brings in some random pictures from your photo library or photo gallery that's in Facebook. They also added some text right underneath your name. It talks about where you work and maybe you went to college and where you live now, and if you're married or not, and your hometown, whatever you've put in your profile, basically, it kind of pulls that in. So some changes to help, I think, and Facebook continually tries to change their format to help their users. It seems like to me, guys, whenever they make a change, I see a whole bunch of people who really kind of lash out and say, why did you change my whatever, right? As Facebook has gone through this. Brian, how do you interact with Facebook? Are you a heavy user, a light user? How do you interact with Facebook?
I'm kind of in the middle. I like to use it to keep in contact with friends and family that I haven't seen for a long time.
Sure.
I also like to use it to promote some of my writing, promote the podcast, and anything of interest that I find, interesting news, videos, things like that. So,
do you find that you're doing more Facebook? So Facebook has almost like an email feature in it. And what do they call it? They call it messages. Do you find you message with people instead of using email and message?
A little bit. Not a whole lot, no.
Okay,
I probably go to the site maybe 3-4 times a day.
Okay.
I'm not on it all day like some people are.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm finding I am actually using that message section more and more because there's very little spam in there, right? Because Facebook locks it down to just your friends, it kind of guarantees, for the most part, unless your friends send you spam, which I guess could happen. But it is kind of a spamless email section, and so I do find myself using that quite a bit. Christian, how do you interact with Facebook? Are you on it a lot? You got a lot of friends on there? How do you use it?
Yeah, I use it on average, maybe. And it really depends, but I'm always normally on there at least 2 to 3 times a week just to kind of check what's going on and see if I got any new messages or whatnot. But I use it kind of just to see what's happening. And a lot of my friends that's their social revolutionary platform. So
yeah.
It's either join them or get left behind. So
would you say you're more active, less active, or just as active as your friends that are out there?
I'd say I'm actually less active. Originally, okay. I wasn't really interested in the idea of getting a Facebook account. And then, a lot of my friends were like, are you on Facebook? Are you on Facebook? Are you on Facebook? And I kept saying no, and it got kind of sickening. So then I said yes, and I gotta admit, it's surprised me and met to a lot of my standards in several different ways.
Okay. John, what about you? How's your Facebook usage? Where do you stand?
Yeah, I'm pretty light. I'm not a. It was my family. I have 9 brothers and sisters, so they got on there and started to say, well, let's the friends, the family, so more for getting that way that type of communication together. So, but I'm kind of light, and it's cool when you're trying to find old friends, that you went to high school, especially again the older generation. Yeah. I think Facebook is more aimed for the younger people.
Yeah.
But as far for the older people, there what's good is to meet up people that you went to high school with or college or whatever, and or people who lived in your neighborhood and stuff. So I'm a bit of a light participant, because you also hear about how Facebook, like companies that, let's say, hire people or that type of thing, like a lot of companies, they kind of go to Facebook and they look for your profile and they try to get a bit of a profile on who you are, so it's a bit like you gotta kind of I'm a little bit like hesitant about what all that information that I'll be putting on there that I'm sharing with because so many people can get to it.
Right. And Christian, you fit the demographic for the younger kids that are out there. Do you find that most of your friends use their cell phones to interact with Facebook, or are they logging in and doing it online, or a combination of both, or?
Yeah, there's definitely a combination of both, but I'm surprised a lot of people do use the Facebook mobile client. Even if I'm on like a road trip or something like that, and I need to check it for whatever reason, I can use my phone to do that.
Yeah.
But it's really, I guess, just what people find comfortable. A lot of people now have been getting these new Android phones, and that seems to have spiked. I mean, a lot of my friends now they have their new Android phones, and along with that comes the Facebook app. So,
right.
I think there's a combination of making it easier to use that has kind of increased that usage.
Yeah. You know, for me, I've got teenagers, my kids are teenagers, and I actually kind of keep up with my kids that way. I don't see them during the day when I'm at work and they're in school. And, as they get older and they're gone more, they'll tweet updates and it really kind of helps me. And maybe I'm a bad dad, but it kind of helps me keep up with them in a lot of ways. And I'll go back and ask them questions about things they posted on Facebook as ways to start discussions with them. So it's been helpful for me at least to kind of monitor. Now, I don't want to say monitor. That's the wrong word. I follow their activities on Facebook, and it's been helpful for me. I know, Christian, is that kind of creep you out? Does your dad follow you on Facebook?
Oh, yeah. He's like anti-Facebook and all that, but he made an account just to kind of, check in with immediate yeah. family and that kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Well, we started that when MySpace came out, years ago, and all our kids went to MySpace. That was, as my wife and I both created MySpace accounts, and we did that with the expressed interest of monitoring the kids and kind of watching what they were doing. We felt that was in our best interest and their best interest to at least make sure we had some idea of what was going on there. And then we migrated off of Facebook MySpace first, and then they followed us over to Facebook for MySpace. And of course, MySpace at this point is all but dead, I would think, right? I mean, you're in that generation. Does anybody use MySpace anymore that you know of, Christian?
Nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, not really.
I think it's pretty.
It's a lot of bands still use it.
Yeah, it's kind of a music. It's kind of turned into a music site, but
right.
I don't think it's. I don't think it's the juggernaut it once was.
No.
What do you think? I mean, what if I were just coming onto Facebook and I was looking for a feature or two that that would make it worth my time to be there and to stay there. What do you think those are? What are the features out there that make sense to use on Facebook that work real well?
To me, I kind of like these event notifications where, say someone has like a party or something going on, they just send out an invite to all their contacts. And, again, going back to the mobile phones, a lot of people instantly get the notification, and then you can kind of see who's attending, who's like kind of thinking about it and who's not. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I like the interaction with how the wall is I've seen a lot of smart stuff in how Facebook pulls information from your friends, like how it displays things based on like what you've been recently looking at, and it tries to instantly, if you're new to Facebook, this is, and it's really just a huge application on the web, but
sure,
Facebook has created this application that almost knows who your friends are the moment you create an account.
Yeah.
The moment you, friend request two people,
yep.
The next thing you know, Facebook is pulling all the data it can to make connections to the people you've already friended to see
sure.
who you may have forgotten about, who, may be looking for you. So in that sense, I think it's really easy to use because, it kind of makes that process automated.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you. The event part, I think, is an underutilized feature of it. For me, I wish I did more event or I use that calendar more than I use it today from a social standpoint. There's a few events that are out there. We've started with all the running I do. We've started putting our running events out there, and then you invite groups to them, and everybody kind of gets a a single event to follow, and then they can post updates and comments about the event. It's really, really handy, especially when they're posting pictures and you want to go back and look at other people's pictures. I mean, it really does tie things together nicely. So I like that. Brian, what do you think? What do you like, or what's the best part, the most useful feature there for you in Facebook?
I would have to say the wall.
Okay.
You know? I mean, that's what Facebook is. So.
Yeah. So you find yourself scanning the wall. You log in and scan the wall.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yep. And, sometimes you only hear about a game that someone's playing, but you can block those out too.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. And those guys that post those pesky running updates of how far they can and how fast, right? I hate those guys. Darn it, I hate those guys. John, what about you? Any feature you find particularly useful there?
No, I'm not running any of those. There's apps there, I guess, and games and stuff like that. But like I said, I'm a rare user. It's, I'll see, I'll get emails, from Facebook and say, somebody wrote on your wall or whatever, so go check it out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are interesting. But it kind of reminds me, it's funny what you were saying before with following your children and stuff. I was watching a TV show called, I think it's called Flashpoint. And the guy's a police officer, and he says, I found out, don't feel so bad to some other guy. He says, I found out my kid had he had a broken arm on Facebook, So it's like, you could just see your kid break his arm, and then he pulls out his phone, and then he goes on Facebook, and he puts out some kind of like a tweet or whatever. And the next thing, that dad finds out about it on Facebook. So
my oldest son posts everything to Facebook, it seems like. And so if I ever want to know where he's at, the first thing I do is go to Facebook. And I could easily just pick up the phone and call him, but for whatever reason, it's easier to find him on Facebook, And then he gives me some clues to what's going on. We don't get to talk a lot, so it kind of helps me keep up. So, hey, interesting. We've talked about this for about 10 or 15 minutes, and we didn't mention any apps, which I think says something. There is a big app community out there, but I'm not using them. Doesn't sound like you guys are. And I know in the early days of Facebook, tons of games, and folks kind of got hooked into those, Farmville and some other stuff, and I guess they're not bad, but I don't know. None of us use them. So,
I know that being, only using it very rarely, I do have on my touch the iPhone or iTouch app,
Right.
So I do get some for Facebook. Yeah. So I do get some information that's kind of pushed to me on the touch, but that's like if you want to call that an app, I don't know, but that's the only one I seem to be using there as far as besides going through in the browser.
Yeah, and I use the Android app, and it's fantastic for Facebook. So it's a good way to if for me, when I want to burn a little time instead of playing Angry Birds, which it seems like everybody's playing, I'll just break out my phone and log into either Twitter or Facebook and check my streams. So it's pretty convenient that way. Hey, I'm going to move on a little bit. There was an article out this week that Consumer Reports came out, and they identified the worst carrier here in the United States, cell phone carrier, that is. And guys, any guess as to which you think was at the top of the list? Anyone want to guess?
Gee, AT&T?
Yeah, AT&T. Certainly AT&T has taken it, and especially with the iPhone, has taken it on the chin for their service. I don't think that's any secret to anybody who's out there who's used them. And really it's down to, for the most part, right, we're down to AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint. Surprisingly enough, Sprint gets the best scores for customer satisfaction. From their, from the way they help customers, even though, and they spent millions of dollars a couple years ago to get that image fixed. I think maybe it was a little too late for them. Christian, who do you use for your cell phone provider?
The Now Network on Sprint.
So you are on Sprint, and how's your service? Are you happy with them
I'm very happy. Yeah.
Good. You're in the Buffalo area, right? And right. I assume you get good connectivity and any, if you could switch, would you drop over to AT&T for the iPhone?
Never.
Wow. All right. Never. Why not?
I wouldn't even consider it.
Okay.
Sprint always, always have a signal pretty much wherever I am. Even if it's not a full 3G signal, I always get some kind of call signal. I do a lot of road trips, take a lot of road trips with family, and it always works, you know. And I'll have people who have an iPhone next to me, and it's not working. I can't connect, you know. And in some areas now where they're starting to roll out 4G, people who are on the Sprint network with the Evo 4G, they're
Right.
living the good life. I mean,
Really?
that's the ultimate setup, really. You're getting about 4 megabytes per second on 4G, which for anyone who can't really measure that, is pretty much
Fast.
you're not waiting for anything. You're watching YouTube videos, you're HDMIing to your television. So that's really exciting.
Yeah.
I really like it, and I have an HTC Touch Pro 2, which came out about a year ago. It's a Windows Mobile 6.5 phone, and even though it's 3G, man, it's a champion. I can watch YouTube videos, I can check news, surf the internet, stream media off of Subsonic in my home server.
Wow.
It really, and I even got Skype Mobile on here, and I can call people through the Skype. So really, anything and everything.
And that's Windows Mobile 6.5, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
so
everybody thinks that's pretty much dead.
no, absolutely not. I mean, a lot of people are getting excited about the Windows 7 stuff, and I don't blame them,
Right,
but
right.
6 and 6.5 were really well supported when they came out, and they still are used.
Sure. And are you going to move to 7 when you get the chance?
I'm considering it, you know. Sprint's coming out with a lot of, they've been doing a lot of deals with HTC as
Sure.
the hardware for their smartphones. So I'll see what's going on. But right now, I mean, there's nothing I can't do on the phone I have right now. So for me, there's really no reason to sink another $200 in a phone when this
Sure.
does everything I need it to do.
Wow. Okay. I didn't expect that from a 6.5
I
Windows
didn't
mobile
expect that
phone.
from a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
What? Why do I need to move? My kids are dad. Look at the shiny new phone.
Wow. Christian, Buffalo does have 4G coverage in that area for you?
They do not,
Okay.
surprisingly.
So it's
Um,
not
but
there yet.
there is a roadmap for it. I was down in Washington, D.C. area using an Evo, and it did have 4G. So a
Yeah.
lot of these big cities got it, and it's beautiful, I gotta admit. But 3G, you still get like a megabit per second, and I never lose the connection, which a lot of people like AT&T, you're paying ridiculous things for data plans that just don't work. And this is,
Right.
I get unlimited data, texting, and internet connectivity and calls free to any cell to cell. Four people are on the plan, and it comes out to like 125 a year
Yeah,
or a
Sprint is by
month or a
far the
month.
cheaper of the three. I mean, if you look at the plan side by side, I couldn't. It cost me a fortune to put all. I have five phones on our plan with Sprint, and with Verizon or AT&T, I'd be broke every month. So it's the way to go. Brian, what are you using, and what's your network?
Well, as you know, I live out in rural Minnesota,
Yeah.
and I just upgraded from the can and two cans and a string. No. Actually, I use Sprint.
Okay. Wow, we're
But
all Sprint guys.
yeah, I'm a little different though. I use the prepaid phones
Okay.
because I can't justify spending,
Sure.
$80 for a plan when I wouldn't even use it enough, for it to make sense. So, but yeah, I got Sprint out here on,
Okay, but really your smartphone is not a phone at all, right?
right, it's my iPod Touch.
Okay, and you and John are kind of in the same boat. John uses his Touch quite a bit for that as well. What do you find you're using your Touch for the most then? What kind of apps are you using on your Touch that you use the most?
Probably the Kindle reader I use a lot.
All right.
Pandora. I have so many apps.
And you just, it's just, right, with the touch, it's just Wi-Fi. So you're picking
Right.
up your Wi-Fi signal out of your house and it's going through your regular internet connection.
Yeah, and you can run Skype on it, so it's
Yeah.
essentially a phone if you've, as long as you have a Wi-Fi connection.
Right. Skype to Skype is free. John, do you use Skype, the Skype on your touch very much?
Yeah, I use it because with the headset, well, the headphones that they give you, there's like a mic on it.
Yeah.
So it's very convenient to, you know, to get on there. Because when you're at your computer, right, like now there, you know, I'm wired in, you know, so right. I can't walk around the house. Whereas this way with the Skype there, it's like, you know, the signal is great. It's not like because you're on a mobile device that it's going to be all choppy. So like it runs well. So yeah, I use Skype on, that's one of the apps I have installed there.
Cool.
And the other thing I use it mostly is for, actually with my Media Smart Server, I convert all my videos, a bunch of TV shows that that I watch every week there. I convert it into an MPEG-4 format because I have the 32 gig iTouch. So then I copy all the videos there. So if I'm around, you know, outside or something, I can watch the videos that way.
Okay.
And then the other thing is I like to use is I listen to – I have the actually all the Harry Potter audio, the audio books there, you know, different audio books. So I listen to that a lot. So audio books is pretty good.
Yeah, audio books and podcasts I think are, you know, my two. I'm a Sprint guy. I just went on a Samsung Epic, which is a 4G phone on Sprint. So, but 4G is not in our area yet either here in Omaha. So we're waiting for that supposedly first quarter of next year. But listening to podcasts for me, number one, are the Skype app for whatever reason on Android is not working on Galaxy S or the Epic. It's not working on those phones. You go to log in and it just hangs, and it's kind of a known issue. So I'm kind of right now, I'm kind of hosed on Skype. I'd like to be able to use the Skype feature on it for some of the work that we do here, and you know, maybe even chatting with you guys during the day on Skype. But yeah, so I'm kind of waiting for that to come up. So that's and we got really good coverage here. I've never had any problems with my phone and or my network. Hey, speaking of apps. I saw this article this week. We covered it a little bit on the Fitness Tech podcast, one of the other podcasts that we do here on the network. Jamie Eichmeyer and I do that on Monday nights. But this high school basketball coach saved this player's life with a iPhone app. So what happened was the player collapsed in the middle of a practice, and the day before, the coach had downloaded this CPR app to his iPhone. It's $1.99, and he had actually gone through the app, like, you know, the app training or whatever it does, and it taught him, you know, to do CPR. Now, it's not like taking a class or being CPR certified, but it was enough that the coach used that app to save this kid's life. I mean, talk about an app that's worth $1.99, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty. Well, to me, that's pretty amazing. That, I mean, it's one thing to buy Skype apps. It's another thing to have a CPR app that you know, helps you save somebody's life. And so I thought if there was ever a cool app out there that actually was worth, you know, worth the money and wasn't for just goofing around, it's certainly this iPhone app. So kind of amazing. Have you guys seen any other apps out there that are not necessarily conventional, your conventional games or phone that are actually useful maybe for stuff other than just goofing around? Something like this?
Well, something like that, indeed.
Yeah.
Just checking my touch here.
You go in there to see if you can find anything. John, yeah. Christian, you guys, have you... I really have. I mean, that was, for me, that was kind of an eye-opener. I thought, wow, a CPR app?
Well, with the amount of iPhones and iPod touches out there, everyone should have that on their device.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, I found that really. I mean, I found that kind of ironic, I guess, and touching at the same time that there's an app out there that can, you know, that can kind of save your life. Jamie brought up an interesting suggestion. She thought maybe someday there would be an app that would be the, and I forget what they call those things, but you know, they hang on the wall, and if you have a heart attack, mm-hmm. you pull them off and you shock the.
Defibrillator.
Yeah. So imagine you set your phone on the guy's chest and then push the button and back away and
yeah. Send 50,000 volts to him.
You'd have this huge battery on there,
yeah.
I'm sure.
But I wonder if there must be some apps like in your case, Jim, like being a runner there, like because the iTouch yeah. there, it has that motion thing there. It knows that, you know, your body's moving or, you know, the right direction of this device. So there must be some type of app that can check how how far you've ran and stuff like that, and give you some information.
Oh yeah, and I use them all the time. I use Runkeeper for that now, and if you follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, you see those posts show up. When I'm done with a run, I'll hit save. It sends it to Runkeeper, and then Runkeeper tweets it and updates my Facebook status with how far I ran and where I ran and those kinds of things. You know, there's also an app on there. You can put your thumb on it, and it will get your pulse. It'll check your pulse if you put your thumb over the camera. So that's a kind of an interesting, you know, medical application for it. And I'm sure WebMD and some of those other things have apps that will give you all kinds of medical information.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you had like a maybe on some smartphones, if you had like, you know, some type of GPS tracking thing, you know, then for kids who get lost or whatever, or get, you know, God forbid, you know, kidnapped or something like that, then maybe there's a way to catch these,
track them,
you know, to find where they are. Yeah.
Well, and Sprint does here. You can turn that on your phone, and I think you pay $10 a month or something like that, and it will track where that phone is at. Now, the phone has to accept that, so you can't do it secretly. But, you know, it wouldn't be – it's not a bad way if you kind of want to keep track of your kids or keep track of the phone to be able, you know, to be able to do that. So pretty handy stuff. There's tons of apps out there. I'm sure we'll talk about more apps, you know, as we roll on with this. But for anybody getting a smartphone, especially an Android phone – and I did a post on the site at averageguy.tv about QR codes this week. That kind of came up. There's an app, the camera app on my phone will look at that QR code and identify it very quickly, and then post that information kind of buried in the QR code right to the screen. In my case, it had my name and my email address and the website, and then folks could just click on the link and go from there. So if you're interested in what that QR code looks like, that little square-looking barcode thing, I got some information out there. On the site. Okay, I want to make a change, move on. Brian, you last week had kind of, I don't want to call you an alarmist or a basher, but we talked a little bit about toolbars, and you kind of went back and said, wow, man, maybe we didn't do justice to that. So you wrote some stuff and posted that to the blog. Tell us a little bit about what you wrote and what you learned about toolbars in the process.
Well, right. I mean, last week we kind of it seemed like we kind of scared people away from using toolbars at all, since none of us use them. But I didn't want to scare the users away from using toolbars, because they can be handy for a person that just wants to, you know, check weather, news headlines quickly, check their email quick, you know, mainly for a person that doesn't spend, you know, 24 hours on the computer like we do. The Bing bar is actually pretty nice. I went in and played with it a little more for writing this article, and there are a lot of good features in there, and you get all your information from Bing. You can watch videos, get your weather, get top news stories, and all sorts of things like that. Sports scores, if you want to, you know, find out the score of the game. Yeah. And there's a lot of options in there. In the post, I would just suggest people go over and check it out and read that article. It's got a lot of interesting things, and it would basically be for the person that, you know, just hops online periodically to check, you know, check their email, news headlines, things like that.
And you, in the post, you mentioned that you installed that on a PC running Internet Explorer 9 beta. Is that right?
Right,
so
correct.
The newest version of that. So it may look a little bit different than if someone's running IE8, may look a little bit different.
Yeah, it'll look a little bit different, but it's essentially the same thing with the same features.
Sure.
And it's also available for XP users as well.
Okay.
And although you can always tell if someone's lying to you about liking Bing, because if you ask them, you know, how's the Bing search looking, they'll look up at you and you say, yeah, I Google at Bing all the time.
Yeah, I Google at Bing.
Here, let me Google it for you. Let me get Bing up here.
Hey, let me ask you guys this question. So in a browser, right, there's a couple different ways to search. One, I could either type in bing.com or google.com or whatever my search engine of choices. There's really not too many more left. I'm sure there's hundreds left, but that people really use. Most people probably use Google. So I could go up, type the address, go to that. How many of you guys use the – over to the right in Internet Explorer anyways – there is built-in search there, and in a few minutes we're going to talk about some additional browsers. But Christian, do you use search from the toolbar, or do you open up a web page, or how do you use search?
Well, I'm into this new thing that they got on a lot of these web browsers where you can just type in the term right in the address bar where you would in Internet Explorer 8 and some of these, they have like a separate search bar and they have the address bar.
Right.
But in the new Internet Explorer 9 beta and a lot of these progressing browsers, you can just type your search term right in the address bar.
Okay.
And it'll see that you're doing a search term instead of trying to hit a website, and it'll use your default search provider to look up the term. So that's really how I use it the most.
And how do I know what my default search provider is in these browsers? Do I need to go, I assume I need to go into the options somewhere depending upon the browser.
Right.
And there's going to be a selection for that. I'm looking in Internet Explorer right now. By far, most people probably use that. It's the one that comes with their PC. And so where do you think, where would I find that?
I know in Internet Explorer 9, you have like your pull down menu. Do you see the little pull down bar?
Yeah.
Like where you would pull, where you would type in your URL.
Right. Right.
There's a little pull down. Now you pull it down and you hold it, and then like it'll open up. It'll show you your last searches. And then like the bottom line for me, it shows I have an icon for Google and I have an icon for Bing.
Uh-huh.
And then I have the word add. So then I can actually add a new search guy, and then I would say that would be my default guy.
Now, that's 9. That's in Internet Explorer 9, right? And that's in beta.
Yeah.
That's not for everybody, right? I mean, that's not – although, John, you've been using that. Is that as stable that the average person could just use that now, or
– Oh, yeah. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. It's really neat. It's got a lot of – because, you know, the thing is what Microsoft – I guess what – because – Internet Explorer is like, it's like their product, right? So, you know, as how can they differentiate it from other, you know, the other, you know, browsers that are available out there? So they want to try to make it somewhat unique, and they want to try to make the browser not so much like, you know, all these pull down menus and stuff like that. So they try to make it very clean interface. So you have basically your toolbar where you would put in your URL, and then you have like three icons, the home, a star, and a little settings. And, you know, so they try to make it very simple. And again, like with the built-in search, you just start typing in the words. And if you put in your words with spaces, then it knows, okay, that's actually you're searching for something. And then apparently you can like if you see, let's say you go to somebody's page, let's say you go to theaverageguy.tv, then you can grab the link, you know, by grabbing the little icon and pulling it down to your toolbar in Windows, let's say Windows 7. So now what happens is it's almost going to be like a page, like almost like an application, right? So like, you know, when let's say in your toolbar, you double click on, Skype or Firefox or whatever, well, here you will have an icon for the site, you know, for the average guy's site. So when you double click on it, it'll open it up in the browser. Or if your site supports some of the new functionality with, I think it's HTML5, like you can actually right-click on the icon, and it'll give you like options for let's say the site. So for instance, if you had let's say forums and all these different areas on your site, well then that's it. You would right-click on the icon while it's in the toolbar. And then you would see like, you know, little lines are saying, you know, forums, ads, all this type of stuff. So
yeah.
they're trying to add some really neat functionality with Internet Explorer 9.
Yeah. Boy, it sounds like it. I did find – so I'm running Internet Explorer 8 because I'm on Windows 7. Boy, we have 9.8.7 there, don't we? So if you that wasn't very funny. You go down, if you click on – so the Bing bar or the Bing search toolbar on Internet Explorer is all the way over to the right of the address bar. And mine is currently set to Bing by default. But I could change that if I just on the right side of that bar click it, and it'll say find more providers.
Mm-hmm.
And I could select that and go down, and although when I click that, I get an error. Oh, it says manage search providers. That's the one I want. And then if I wanted to pick Google and change that, I could if I wanted to do a different provider. That's in there. So you can change that. You can change the search provider that's in there. It doesn't have to be the one that comes default. Christian, who do you use as a default provider? Who do you prefer if you're searching for something?
I'm a Google guy. I tried out Bing. You know, I liked it, but I didn't really see what the advantage was. So
yeah,
I'm at Google right now.
John, what about you?
Yeah, Google. Okay. I'm mostly using Google, but I did hear some talk about Google or is it Bing that they're trying to aggregate like a lot of your content. Like let's say you would type in, I don't know, music, like it would kind of like search, you know, on your computer, it would search in on the internet, it would search on your mobile devices, like everything on your network that's connected. I know that there was some talk about that going on, and I'm not sure if that was Google that was trying to bring that all together on their site, or if it was Bing, like Microsoft using Bing in the search in the Bing.
Hmm.
Anybody hear about that?
No, not sure.
No, just me.
No, just you, John.
Maybe I'm privy to some information, and I shouldn't have said something.
Maybe it's your MVP status. Brian, after doing the review on the Bing bar, I assume the Bing bar has built-in search to it as well, right? We put Brian on mute, maybe? Come back to us, Brian.
Okay, I'm here.
Sorry about that, guys.
That's
all right. So I assume that the Bing bar has built-in search in it, and it uses Bing. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. And but then, you can change it.
Oh, you can. So you can make a Google if you want. After doing the review and looking at Bing, are you a Bing guy or are you a Google guy for search?
For search, definitely Google.
Okay. Why?
Yeah. It's so easy to use, and I've been using it for years. Okay. So it's just hard for me to make the switch sometimes. I've played around with Bing. It has its interesting features, but Google's, I don't know, it's just always been there.
Okay, good
enough. It's like a friend.
sure. And you get used to something, and you know, you don't always want to move away from it. Brian, anything else you want to add to that segment on the Bing bar before we kind of talk a little bit more about browsers?
Well, I just wanted to bring up if you're going to use a toolbar, stick with the major guys like the Bing bar, Google toolbar, maybe the Yahoo toolbar if you want, but make sure it's a reputable toolbar so you're not, you know, getting a bunch of spam on your system.
Spyware, adware, that kind of stuff. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah, it can be sketchy. Some of those toolbars out there can be sketchy from a usability standpoint, or even, I mean, like you said, adware or spyware or just straight out viruses. So be careful.
Yep.
Yeah, very good. Christian, we were going to talk a little bit about browsers. We kind of jumped the gun on that a little bit in the toolbar segment, but why don't you talk a little bit about the four browsers that are available out there, and then why don't you talk about maybe your preference and why?
Yeah, so we're looking at Internet Explorer 8 for the most part, 7 and 8. There's roughly 15% of users who use Internet Explorer are still on IE6.
Wow.
And then IE7
really?
Has about 45%, and IE8 takes the rest. So even though they've dropped support for IE6, it still hasn't completely dropped in. So there's still some.
What was that percentage of people still using 6?
15%.
Wow.
And, yeah. And let me say this: if you're not in a corporation that tells you you have to use 6, and there are some government agencies and such that still say because of programs that were written that have to work in 6 and they don't work in anything else, they have to. If you're a home user and you're still on Internet Explorer 6, you need to upgrade. I mean, it's dangerous. And I don't want to be an alarmist there either, but it's a bad browser. And so at least make the jump to 7. 8 is a good browser, and you can make the jump all the way to 8. And so, yeah, get off 6. And the way to check that, right, is to open that browser and then go to help, right?
Yeah,
And about Internet Explorer, and that'll tell you your version, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And okay. if you haven't done so, just run Windows updates, and it'll normally pick it up
sure.
right off the bat.
Sure.
And roughly to continue that stat completion, about 2% people made the jump to Internet Explorer 9 beta. So a lot of people in the 7-8
That's
range.
me. I'm one of those 2%.
Oh, we all
Yeah.
are, aren't we?
I was special, John.
Yeah.
So then we got Firefox, which is the latest beta is 4.4 beta. And roughly most users are on Firefox 3.5 and 3.6. And then finally, we have Chrome on, I believe version 8 just came out for Chrome as well in the last 2 weeks, and Safari 5 for both the Mac and Windows platform. So these are, your overview. You got the Chrome, the Firefox, and the Internet. And I consider those the ones that just target the Windows platform. But you also can't forget Safari is a major browser. Obviously, it's the default browser if you have a Mac PC. And it is also offered if you install iTunes on any platform. So whether it be Mac or Windows. So we're looking at these four different browsers, and a lot of people get this question in their mind, and they're like, well, I don't really know which one to choose. And sooner or later, they kind of make a choice. Some normally keep two, some are just dedicated to one. And why is that? What is it that makes that tick for people? And so I did some research, and I, from a personal perspective, I think it has a lot to do with what is the first thing people are advertised with. So if someone hears about Firefox first and they just have this new PC ready to go and they see something positive about it, the average user isn't going to really think twice about hitting the download button. Another great thing that really kind of turns it is functionality and extensibility, which I'd say right now Firefox leads in that run.
And what do
Firefox
you mean by that, Christian, when you say extensibility?
extensibility, yeah. The Firefox Foundation has a whole developer community of people who are writing these extension add-on freeware type components that add functionality to the default Firefox install.
Sure.
An example would be like ScriptMonkey, which kind of parses scripts, and you can get like music players, and it there are a lot of apps you can download that go right into Firefox. And some of them help increase browsing speed and all that stuff. So there's a big freeware kind of support group for Firefox for extending it to make it what people want when they can't get it in the vanilla install. So that's an attraction point for Firefox. For Internet Explorer, it's not really extensible in the sense that it has that same open market, but it does. You get the toolbars. And you get the search and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of in the middle there. And finally, we come to Chrome, which has really taken great strides in being the first browser to get as many followers as it has since its initial release. So it's the first browser to come into the market on day one and a year later have as many followers as it does now. And those numbers are still climbing, which is really surprising. But then again, Google is putting out a lot of apps, and their web browser, really great connection point is that the Google browser really communicates with all the Google applications, and kind of again, it's a lot of integration on Google's part. And then going back to Safari, which is the final browser, I don't use it that much. I don't really comment on it that much, but it does have some cool graphical user interface that I like. It does a nice job of showing your most recent sites, and it does have some nice rendering. I like reading the when I use the Safari browser, the text always looks really sharp for me. But I don't really use it that much. But when I do, I notice it's a browser I could live with if I decided to make it my default browser.
Yeah, and I don't think it's as good on Windows as it is on Mac.
Yeah, definitely on Mac, you're talking the native API and you're
Right.
looking at good stuff.
Right. So, Christian, what do you gravitate towards from a browser perspective, and why do you like it?
I the things I look for in a browser are usability, speed, security, and extensibility. And with that in mind, a lot of these browsers have been competing to grab at those three themes. You'll see with Internet Explorer 9, it shares a lot of traits with Chrome. Firefox is doing its own thing. So they're getting very competitive, and it's becoming harder to say, this is good and this is bad. And there's a lot of things I like in each particular browser that one has where the other one doesn't. So let's kind of break down some of the key features that appeal to me, as my native browser is Internet Explorer, but I do use the other two for web development, so I have to be on top of all the different standards. So I do use them all. Internet Explorer is my favorite, though, and here's some of the good things here. With Internet Explorer, you're looking at support. Whether or not you like Microsoft and their updates, Internet Explorer is always going to be supported for several years before that particular version goes bad. So, like with Internet Explorer 6, even though it wasn't really the greatest browser, it was supported throughout its lifespan. Privacy. Internet Explorer introduced something called in-private browsing filtering, which allows you to have a browser instance where no data is recorded, your history isn't recorded, and it's just kind of a open session. And you
And you
gotta
could
admit,
invoke you would invoke that if, say, you were in a public on a public
right.
PC and you didn't want any trails left behind to where you'd been.
Right,
Right.
exactly.
Okay.
Yep. And searching with the smart address bar that we mentioned earlier, also in Chrome and Firefox. And IE8 did start add-ons like Firefox, but I still credit that to Firefox. That's something that
Yeah.
Firefox kind of brought to the table and handled well. Now, one thing for me is I'm always a tabbed browsing guy. I'll have like seven tabs open. So that's really important to me, is which browser can handle the tabs the best. And with these new betas coming out, there are a lot of features that change that viewpoint for me. But with Internet Explorer, it has something called tab recovery, where let's say you had this amazing link, you still hadn't favorited it, and you want to find it. And just as you're getting ready to save it, Internet Explorer crashes or your PC freezes up, and you get really frustrated, you can't find a link. If you restart Internet Explorer 8, most of the time it is going to prompt you with something called Recover Pages, where it lists all the pages you recently viewed and it asks if you want to restore your session. And that's come a long way from Internet Explorer 6 and 7, where your browser session got frozen up or stuck up somehow, and you lost your session. That was it. You started from scratch. So they've come a long way in that. Some of the things that I still don't like is it does still have a bit of a crash potential, but that's really with older PCs. It doesn't reach the add-in potential that Firefox has and probably never will. It's really a Microsoft baby and will stay that way. And it is. If you look at raw data, Internet Explorer 8 has slightly slower marks in terms of loading pages and uses much more memory compared to other browsers. And I think that has something to do with how it integrates with Windows, but it does use more memory, and it does have a bit of a slower load time. So that kind of covers Internet Explorer, but really, if I were to say why I use Internet Explorer, I would simply say because it's the easiest for me to deploy and teach people how to use. But that's not to say that Internet Explorer is a one size fits all, which I think is why this browser battle has continued on, is because people are looking for different things and they want to be able to have that versatility and extensibility that we talked about earlier. So moving on to Chrome, Chrome went to version 8 2 weeks ago and has a new Chrome Web Store, where you can get apps and all this stuff. So again, another browser coming on the apps market, which really does a much better job than Internet Explorer does, but it still doesn't hold the Firefox and ring a circle. And I gotta say, I am very, very impressed with speed and the reliability of Chrome. Any page, any time, no matter what bandwidth you're on, Chrome seems to do a really good job of rendering the page fast. I'd say out of all three browsers, it renders the page the quickest. It's got a really clean design. and it really maximizes your reading space. And again, it incorporates search directly with its own search engine. So
Now,
that's a go
Christian,
figure.
let me ask you this question with apps, because folks, all of a sudden, you know, we talk about an app store. Google's got, or Apple's got one, Microsoft's got one. It seems like everybody's coming up with an app store. So this Chrome web store that they call it, chrome.google.com/web store. These apps, are they downloading to my PC and installing, or how is that working? What some of them are free and some of them are paid. How is that kind of working? Do you know?
Right. It's not that it necessarily installs as like a separate program.
Right.
A lot of them are, they install, sure they install, but it relies obviously on Google Chrome. So it's not like if you were to unins it's not like if you uninstalled Google Chrome, the application would still work. A lot of the applications are web-based and work only with Google Chrome, obviously.
Okay.
So it's not like a separate install, but it's not like it's just a complete add-in and it's modifying a current install.
Yeah, this is a pretty interesting layout that they have here. I just pulled that up, and it's very easy to navigate through. And they've got some themes out there that you can download and use with your browser and such. So, some good looking stuff that's out there.
Right. So let's look at kind of some of the things I don't like about Chrome and that are a huge concern among a lot of people is that privacy was the number one issue people had with Google Chrome. And obviously Google is becoming such a data wealth of all sorts of information and crossing paths. The browser does monitor and collect a lot of user data, some of which happens even before you're aware of it, and a lot of it you don't even see happening. I was on Google just to show you how in-depth it is. I was on the Google Chrome browser, doing a couple search terms. And when I went to go check my Google Mail, all the advertisements in the Google Webmail were based on the search terms I had just searched 2 minutes ago, which you may not think is a big deal, but all of these things that are just like, whoa, how did it do that? That's monitoring and collecting data, which a lot of people are concerned about privacy-wise, which is why if you're a privacy fanatic, Internet Explorer's in-private filtering is a really cool way to go. There are still a couple security vulnerabilities in Chrome, not really a big deal, not a big concern, but it's still in its infancy compared to the leading on Firefox, which was introduced in 2004, and Internet Explorer, which has been there the whole time. So I have a feeling Google Chrome still has a lot to show and speak as to what its reputation is. And finally, we'll just sum up Firefox really quick. Started by the Mozilla Firefox Foundation in 2004, based on the original Netscape browsing. Some of the features I really like is it works really nice with JavaScript, which, if anyone doesn't know, kind of enhances the browsing experience. Some of the add-ins that developers use help monitor and show traffic. So, say you're on a website and you're not really sure whether the website's, bringing out in or out sensitive data, you're not sure what's being transmitted, does a good job of tracking all that and letting you know what's going on. But in terms of a browser, I haven't actually really used Firefox in a while. I've been kind of switching back and forth between the Internet Explorer and the Chrome, but I definitely say Firefox is still the number two browser in terms of usage. And will they lose that spot to Chrome remains to be seen, but again, there's just so many different variables that you can plug into. It comes down to what the user wants to see and what the user wants to do.
Okay, and so you said up front, IE is kind of your, I hate to say the word favorite, but that's the one you default to most of the time. Is that right? Okay, good review on that, Christian. I think that gives us a good idea what's out there. You know, I think some folks, like you said, they just use whatever came with the PC. And there are some other options out there. Brian, what are you using from a browsing experience?
I still use Firefox. I've been using that before version 1. And for me, it's just a matter of what I'm used to. I love the add-ins that you can use to, enhance your browsing experience. And there's a lot of interesting add-ins that increase productivity.
Any particular add-in in Firefox that you really like?
Customize Google.
All right.
That's a pretty neat one. You can customize the way Google acts and behaves and stores your data.
All right.
But I've been using Chrome recently too, so I can't quite make the switch yet. You know, it's just old habits die hard.
Well, and I don't think you have to. I mean, I think if there's a story in all of this, is each browser kind of has their strengths and weakness, and I use it. I mean, I use IE when I'm so like all the show notes that I put together, I use Live for. So Microsoft Live.com is Microsoft's apps kind of offering, and Word and Excel and PowerPoint and OneNote are all available for free out there at Live.com, and you can use those. So I use that in conjunction with SkyDrive. That's their cloud-based storage. It works really well in IE. And so I just all the functionality is there. It doesn't work in Chrome. I really don't use Firefox very much. And so when I'm doing the show, I'm in IE almost exclusively, just because everything works better that way. But from just a straight out browsing experience, I'll open up Chrome. And if I'm just going to check email and maybe be on Facebook, Chrome is faster for me. And I think it works a little bit better. And so I'm a Chrome guy when I'm just surf around. So I think it's not, it doesn't have to be either or. It can be both and it just kind of depend on your scenario. John, you're using IE9 beta at this point, and does that bring some new things to it that's not found in 8 or found in the other browsers?
Yeah, what's nice is, like I was saying, if the website you're going to supports that HTML5, I think it's called.
And that's the new web standard, right?
Yeah, so I know, for instance, like one of the sites I go to is Ian Dixon's site, the Digital Lifestyle. And if I bookmark, or not necessarily bookmark, but if I grab the link and I drop it into my toolbar and then I right-click on it, then I'll see like options. It'll tell me like blogs, podcasts, forums, iPhone app, Made for Media Center. So it gives me a lot of choices there, which the other browsers don't do. So that's a nice thing about it. So that's my preferred Internet Explorer 9, like you said, beta. Yeah. And I do have Firefox installed also on my PC. I go to that once in a while. Originally, I was using Firefox. But then since the Internet Explorer 9 came out, I said, I'll give that a try. But I know, like, for instance, my brother there, he's a bit of more of a techie guy, let's say, hunting down information, going to a lot of sites and stuff. And he likes Firefox because, you can run some stuff I think there's like these patches, like Christian was saying, or little apps, like I think one's called NoScript. So let's say you won't get ads popping up. When you go to websites, sure, you have all the ads on the right side scrolling, yep, and stuff like that. So let's say you don't want to have none of that stuff going on. So you can throw these little apps like that to say, look, I don't want the ads. I don't want this, yep, pop-ups and all this stuff. So if you're more into that type of thing, like kind of narrowing down, saying, look, I just want to go to the site and I just want to get the content I want and I don't want to be distracted by other stuff, then maybe using something like Firefox would be good to, because it'll give you those choices like really quick. Mm-hmm. But then you have to, you have to be a little bit of a tech guy. You have to go in and hunt them down and go to their site and grab their, see which one of those plugins does what it is you're looking for, mm-hmm, and do it. And then, and you have to remember that it's on. Sometimes if you go to some site and, there's like some JavaScript or whatever, some animation that's going on, and it's like, you're using Firefox, you're blocking this type of information, and then it's like you're there and you say, hey, I don't see what's going on. Well, yeah, because you're probably blocking this information. So I find when you have to be a good user, you have to know that you're using those applications and that they're in effect,
Yeah. And John, I know of no conflicts between the browsers, so I could have all four of them installed on my PC. If I did install the beta, does it completely replace, so I'm talking about the beta, IE9 beta, does it completely replace my Internet Explorer instance, and so that's all I can do, or can you still run IE8 and IE9 beta at the same time?
I don't know. I think it replaces it completely.
Okay.
Yeah, it does.
And Christian, are you aware of any security issues where one browser is more from a security standpoint? You pay attention to this stuff for what you do. and maybe you said this early, but from a security standpoint, is any one any more secure than the other ones?
I'd say in the long run, they always all have their exploits.
Okay.
But in the business world, Internet Explorer 8 has, and even I think it started back in 6 onward, has this thing for servers that you can use, like say you're in a library, called Internet Explorer Enhanced Security Configuration, which does lock down a lot of the vulnerabilities that are potential threats. But for the regular average browser and user on their home PC, I really wouldn't worry about it too much. Just the rule of thumb is to stay out of stupid sites and kind of know what you're browsing. And if you're on a reputable site, there's no need to worry about it. So
yeah, very very true. We were talking earlier. For the show, I take a WMA file, which is just a Windows media file, and I convert that to a MP3 to get it mixed and produce the podcast. And if you go to Google and type WMA to MP3 convert, I think the whole every site that comes up to begin with, I was very suspect of, and I don't know why I was, but they just didn't feel great to me. I was looking for, a more reputable site. So I think you still have to be careful on the web. The browsers themselves are not necessarily going to protect you inherently from those kinds of things. You got to kind of know what you're looking for and just be careful. Go to sites that you're familiar with. Get recommendations. If you have questions, look it up in a browser before you, get comments on this site or something like that and get some recommendations necessarily just before you go, browsing around the web. So, Christian, any other thoughts on web browsers?
My last thought that just kind of came to mind is the fact that Chrome and Firefox appeal to a lot of, artistic kind of creative people, 'cause Firefox and Google are really easy to skin, so you can really change the entire color scheme and the way the browser looks to your favorite theme or TV show or whatever, which Internet Explorer doesn't really have, and I don't even think has in the upcoming version. So that kind of shows you that Firefox and Chrome are trying to battle Internet Explorer by introducing creativity, again, to just make it more... to target more people who are interested in customizing it to how they want it to look.
All right. Very good. Nice work. Brian, any other final thoughts on the browser?
The only other thing that I really like about Firefox is you can create a master password to lock down all of your autofill data.
Okay.
Yeah. That's really nice.
Well, and I know Firefox was strong in the area of add-ins. When browsers could do nothing, they were some of the first to say you can install this add-in that has this kind of functionality or this add-in. And they're still pretty strong there, although some of the other browsers have just ripped off that functionality, right, and incorporated it into their browsers as standard functionality. And I think that's less differentiating now between those browsers. But yeah, for those add-ins are our strong suit for sure. John, any thoughts? Any final thoughts on the browser? John's on mute too.
Oh, sorry. All good. I think everything is all good.
All right.
All stuff to digest and
good.
Think about.
Christian, nice work on that.
Yep.
At the end of the show here, we're getting ready to wrap things up. I'd ask you guys, we're going to rename this final segment to Websites to Watch. And I just wanted to each week as we go through this to kind of throw out some sites that folks might to get some benefit out of and that have some interest. So, Brian, I'll let you go first. What's your site website to watch?
Okay, since it's the holiday season and everyone's shopping, I thought I'd mention Woot.com, Woot.com. Every day there's a new deal on a lot of tech products, computers, TVs, cameras, flash drives, and other tech gadgets. Not everything is tech-based every day, but I'd say about 75% of their daily deals are. I've gotten a desktop, some flash drives, a couple cameras at really, really good bargains.
Really? Well, I see their bargain today is a skill tool set for $299. Now, they're already sold out, right? So this is the deal. You got to get in and get in fast on some of these deals, right?
Right. And then sometimes they have what's called a WooDoff, where a product is put up on the site, and it's only up there until it's sold out, and then they put up another one,
okay,
which is kind of neat, and it's really cheap.
Yeah, and I've even seen folks with the little Woot lights, and they were, right, they, it was a USB, they could plug it in, and whenever there was a new Woot deal, the lights would go off.
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, to alert them that there's a new deal. They also have some, they also have some sub-sites.
Right, they have their shirt, Woot.
So shirt.woot?
Yep, wine Woot, where they have deals on wine, and... there's another one I think they just added as well.
Looks like, here like they have deals.woot.
Yeah, there you go.
Kids.woot, and now they have sellout.woot.
Wow.
And each one of these looks like it has its kind of the, its own individual kind of genre, so to speak. So yeah, it's a fun place to buy stuff for sure. If you've never bought from woot.com, it's a fun place to shop.
And shipping's always $5.
Straight flat $5.
Yep.
Every time.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. Good. Thanks, Brian. Christian, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to challenge Brian there with that flat $5, because if you go through our affiliate links or head over to Newegg.com, most all items are free on shipping and are exempt from taxes. Newegg.com is your pretty much your number one hot stop for all computer technology parts, laptops, desktops, getting something for the holiday season. Every week, the Newegg has something called a shell shocker. There's a tongue twister for you.
Yeah.
But it has one or two deals that are just prices that no one can even argue with. They're just unbelievable. This week's deal is a Roswell PCI wireless adapter card for your computer. $12 for a wireless and networking card. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking all sorts of things in stock, from the enthusiast to the person who just wants a laptop for the kids for Christmas, Newegg's the way to go. Free shipping on most all their items, comes within 2 to 3 business days, and with the Christmas season, they do have special shipping plans to get it there before Christmas. And again, no taxes, so you're paying wholesale, and you're getting the good stuff right from the source. So
yeah, and you mentioned I do have a link on the site. If folks come to theaverageguy.tv and click through the link, it won't save them any money, but we'll get a little portion of that, and that helps us pay for the various costs associated with keeping the website running and some other things. So it helps us out a little bit, and you get a great deal through Newegg. We've got a couple other affiliate links as well. One of the ones I've just picked up recently is ThinkGeek, and of course, they're kind of a geek gadget store as well, and they've got a lot of cool gadgets that they sell. My kids love those. We get the magazines for them about 2 or 3 times a year, and those things just get torn up in our house as folks read them, and they look at them. They just, the gifts in them are great. So that's one of the affiliates, and so check out the site and click through those. If you're going to go to newegg.com, we'd love to have you go through it and do it, and it's a great place to buy stuff. Okay, mine is Groupon, which has been in the news lately because Google has tried to acquire Groupon and what they do. And basically what Groupon is it stands for group coupon. And it's what they do is they come up with these deals on the site. There's one new deal a day, and it's usually to buy something at a 50% or more discount. And so currently I could for $150 I could get a teeth whitening treatment. In my area, regular value would be $435. And they don't, kind of like Woot, in reverse, the deal isn't on until a number of people have agreed to buy into the deal. So in this case, once 30 people bought this deal, then everybody gets it at that price. But if 30 people don't buy it, then the deal's not on, and they do it for a certain period of time. So again, it adds kind of this competitive purchasing element to it, and in this case, even a social element to it. But they do all kinds of things on Groupon. That's Groupon, just like it sounds. And new deals every day. You can sign up for emails and stuff. And so that's kind of cool. There's been a lot of talk about Groupon of late, and I think Google was going to buy them for some ridiculous amount of money. I mean, like,
I think it was $6
billion. Yeah, $6 billion.
And they turned them down.
Something ridiculous. And so maybe you've heard about them, and go out and check that out. I don't, I don't necessarily endorse it. That some of their deals are a little bit hokey at times. Stuff you may or may not ever use. But every once in a while, something pops in there that's pretty interesting, and you can get a pretty good price on it. I especially like when the coupons come out for restaurants, because you can get maybe $50. You can get a $50 gift certificate for $25. Well, that works out. That works out pretty well if you're going to go to that restaurant and eat out. So, Groupon, give that a look and see if that's interesting to you. And then watch the news. That's the one where I'm wondering how much that thing's going to sell for in the end. Wouldn't you love to be the founders of Groupon? I think someone said that from the day that website opened until now, it's made $20,000 a second.
Wow.
If it sold for $6 billion. So you'd love to be in that company. So, guys, anything else you want to add in before we wrap things up for today?
Just make sure to back up your data.
There you go.
It's so important. It can't be stressed enough.
Yeah, and we do have a backup link at the site as well, and that'll take you right to the external hard drive section in Newegg. So if you're doing nothing for backup at this point, might be a great idea during this Christmas season to pick up an external drive and do some backup. If you're interested in learning more about backup, John and I podcast every week, Wednesday nights live and recorded on the Home Server Show. That's homeservershow.com. We talk a lot about backup. So if you're interested in learning more about that, and you don't have to be a geek or a nerd to listen to that either, but we'll help you with your backups as well. And so, John, we just did a pretty long podcast last night, didn't we?
Yeah, it was almost 2 hours long.
It was.
The longest one. It was the longest show we've done. The longest one was 88. I think we talked about Vail when it was first introduced, but that's it. This one was an hour and 54 or 55 minutes. Yeah, it was a really long
show. It was a long show. We had a lot to say. We'd taken a week off, and so we kind of had to put two in one. So that's over at thehomeservershow.com if you want to take a listen. If you want to get a hold of us, the easiest way to do that is send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. That will get you there. Again, we're out at Twitter at TheAverageGuyTV. Want to thank you for listening. Hopefully, we haven't gone too long for you. We're always open for updates and feedback and suggestions that you might have. I spent a lot of time last weekend updating the site and putting some links out there for you for iTunes and for if you want to add it to your Google RSS reader. The RSS feeds for the podcast are out there. If you want to put them in any kind of catcher or any kind of RSS feed reader. That's all up and running. If you have questions on how to do that, send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll walk you through that to get you set and so you can listen to us each week. So we appreciate it, guys. Thanks for coming out tonight, and thanks for chiming in, and we hope you have a good night as well. So good night.
Okay. Cool. See you, everyone, later.
Bye, guys.
Good night.